I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. Thank you to patrons, including Michael Kepper, Philip D, Neil Fisher, Charlotte Stegall, KV, Mike Atkins, Richard Bruce, Guy West MacDonald, Ricky Wakefield, many more who are supporting us directly. You can join them and get access to a full-length ad-free show, listen to us live, get Extra Message, our weekly sister show that is exclusive for patrons, and a whole bunch more by going to patreon.com/UK Tech. Thank you, however you support us. The owners of Virgin Media and O2 are in talks to create a new TV and mobile power player to challenge BT and Sky in the UK. And this is according to The Guardian this weekend. It said a deal between Virgin Media and O2 would bring together the mobile operator's 34 million customers, which is the largest network in the UK, which I sometimes forget. But anyway, it will bring together O2's 34 million customers and Virgin's 5.3 million broadband and pay TV and mobile users together. So there'll be a bit of crossover there, but we're talking about a huge tie-up if The Guardian is correct and this goes through. Now, if you remember, we actually talked about a potential takeover of O2 about 5 years ago when Three wanted to snap it up, but it was blocked at the time by the European Commission, I think it was, on competition grounds. Mm. But this probably makes a lot more sense. And right now, because we've got with the virus causing hell for so many industries, one industry that it's not causing hell for is home broadband and TV services and things like that, because everyone needs them and is using them a hell of a lot more. So there's probably less risk in terms of like stability for the companies to be thinking about doing something like this. And there's talk also this weekend that lockdown measures for office workers could go could basically go on for months in terms of being told, hey, you should work from home rather than go back to central offices. So with all that said, it's quite a relatively, let's say, relatively stable period to be talking about something like this. Now, the last point I wanted to mention just before I let Ian get a word in edgeways is that, interestingly, Vodafone said late last year that it was going to take over from BT to be the backbone of Virgin Mobile next week. So if this merger goes ahead with O2, it wouldn't surprise me, I don't think it would surprise anyone, if Virgin Mobile became sort of powered by O2, or even maybe Virgin Mobile as a brand goes away entirely and it becomes an O2 thing. And obviously I can see Vodafone complaining, but in some of the commentary that I've seen in opinion pages today when I was looking through this story, it seems like the consensus is that from a business perspective, it seems to make quite a lot of sense. And from a competition perspective, it seems justifiable. And having Virgin and O2 together could be quite a compelling offering. I know you have strong opinions on these sorts of subjects, Ian, and you're arguably more informed about the history of some of these companies than I am. Anyway, so what's your take?
Well, I mean, nothing would make me happier than to see Telefonica gone, really. I don't think it's a particularly good company, and I think I'd rather see someone else have O2. I feel like that is a network that is truly stagnated. I don't feel like it's particularly innovative. I don't feel like it speaks particularly interestingly about, you know, modern advancements. It just feels like a nothing network, really. It doesn't have a particularly good brand anymore. It feels like it needs to be overhauled massively. And of course, Virgin Media would benefit from it because they have a mobile phone thing that's MVNO or whatever. so it kind of makes sense for them to move all of that onto an owned network and for it to be all part of one thing. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and I think you'll remember this, but was there not talk of, so Virgin Media is what was MTL and is owned by a company in the US called Liberty Media. Yes. It has nothing to do with Branson other than licensing the use of the Virgin brand. Now,
that's right.
My understanding was that some time ago there were discussions with Liberty Media that they were going to take over something. They were going to take over Vodafone, weren't they? And then they were going to sell what was left of Vodafone, the on-demand video bit of Virgin Media, leaving them basically with a weird sort of company that I didn't understand at all. So I assume that that's all gone away now.
Yes, you're right. It wasn't last year, was it? It would have been 2018, I think.
It was a while ago, yeah.
And we did talk about it. It was Vodafone wanting to buy the Virgin Media, but it wasn't all of it. And
it was Europe, wasn't it? Germany.
It was definitely Germany and probably Eastern Europe. I don't believe it was the UK. It was some of the smaller ones. Yeah, I don't know what happened to that.
Well, obviously it wasn't a viable idea.
Yeah, but it was billions. It was probably about 10, 12, 50, certainly in double digit billions for a deal like that. But obviously didn't happen.
Yeah, I wouldn't object to a deal like this because Virgin obviously does not own a proper telecom, a proper mobile network. So it's not like Three coming in and saying they want O2, because that would reduce the number of different companies running mobile networks in the UK. Something like this feels like much less of a competition problem to me. And it gives Virgin Media that true quad play or whatever they call it. It would actually then legitimately be able to compete with Sky. And of course the mobile operators are all, flailing around as I am verbally. Flailing around trying to launch, services that fill the need of video over broadband and stuff like that, because they all know they want to be these quad play deals. This would arguably give Virgin the absolute best one because it has a very strong fiber network, which could be better, it could be more widespread. And it has, a TV service, which is, probably arguably not quite as good as Sky's, but certainly offers enough to keep most people interested. So it could produce a very good company. But whether or not the regulator would allow such a thing is another thing entirely.
Yes, you're right. And I think that I don't want to use the word synergy, which I know by saying that I have also used it. But let's just use it for what it is. The Virgin Media and O2 being together would create some very interesting marketing options as well, because O2 does a lot with its sort of live music and video. Obviously, it brands the O2 arena.
It does.
And Virgin could potentially stream concerts in a post-COVID mm-hmm. world where we maybe want to enjoy things remotely. And you could see that being a compelling tie-up, that maybe if you can't get tickets or you don't want to get tickets for a concert, maybe you can stream it in 4K exclusively on Virgin if you've got the Virgin TV box. Like, there's lots of things like that that I could see benefiting from these two companies partnering, more so than if O2 wanted to buy three, or if it was a smaller network like Virgin Media partnering with three. I mean, what does that really give you? It doesn't feel right.
No, but here's a question for you. I feel like at the moment, particularly, the Virgin brand is not quite what it was. Do you think that a decision like this would lead to a mass rebranding of the whole thing to launch it as something? I'm not saying they would go with O2 because that probably doesn't really make any sense. But do you think they would relaunch it as a new brand that would be all encompassing and would be like a whole new product, if you will?
I don't think Virgin would change.
You don't?
Because I think the Virgin brand is too strong.
Mm.
And I don't, but O2 has a history of changing its name.
Well, it does.
Cellnet. It's been Cellnet. It's been
BT, something or other.
Something else. It's not clear cut exactly what it means, but then the O2 name is used for things like the arena and stuff. So I don't know, and I'm certainly no marketing expert, so I wouldn't want to hypothesize too much.
I just wonder if I feel like if you're going to create a company that's one of the biggest sort of its kind, you kind of want to do what EA ended up doing, don't you? And having a whole new brand where everything is brought together and it feels like a much more cohesive thing. Of course, EA's BT, so, you know, ultimately that's a nonsense because then they get bought by another company and it all starts over again.
Yeah. Well,
I've had terrible trouble with Virgin Media recently. Did you suffer from that massive outage the other night?
The one that affected most of the country?
Yes, it was absolutely shocking.
I did. I was on FaceTime with Brad at the time, and moments after we started, both of our networks cut out because we're both on Virgin, and yeah. I was Googling it over the 4G, and Twitter was just on fire. It was just thousands and thousands and thousands of posts. Everyone's like, oh God, Virgin's gone out for the entire network. But it wasn't, it was something central.
It wasn't
to do with like any endpoint stuff.
It was really weird. The router stayed connected to the network, and I was able to do a speed test at full speed down, but as soon as it tried to do the upload speed test, it just fell over. It couldn't get any data out. So I suspect that some router somewhere in the core network had toppled over, and it took them a long time to find it. And what annoys me is they never ever say what went wrong. I would really appreciate them saying, hey guys, it was this bit of equipment, it went wrong for this reason, we've done this to stop it from happening again. But they don't say that. They're just like, engineers have resolved the issue.
Yeah, that is interesting. I was just looking up if they'd said anything since, but apparently not. Certainly not that I can find anyway. Well, any thoughts you have on Virgin Media and O2 teaming up, do, of course, let us know. hello@uktechshow.com. If you have any insight on why you may switch from BT and EE, let's say, to a combined entity, I'd be very interested in hearing that. Engadget wrote this week that the British Museum has made images of more than half of its collection, that's about 4.5 million objects, available online, with almost 2 million images published through a Creative Commons 4 license. About 280,000 photos are being published for the first time as part of this new upload, which means you can zoom into them and pan around these images and things, so you can, for some of the ones that I've seen, you can get closer to an artifact than you can when it's behind glass in person. Engadget wrote as well that the museum already had quite a few items available, which included the Rosetta Stone, which I've seen in person. It's a lovely piece of rock to go and look at. But now that's expanded massively. And I was having a little browse around this because, again, as part of my efforts to do something a bit new while in this lockdown period, I've been using Google's Arts and Culture web app. I think I've been using, because I didn't want to install the app. And you can explore some museums using the museum equivalent of Street View. And my favorite is it's a small but interesting little room of Japanese history in the British Museum, which I was wandering around the other night in bed and found very relaxing to just sort of be pottering around. But some of these new items that have been uploaded, they're there in massive detail. So there's one about death, like death through history. There's a huge collection of Chinese artifacts from thousands of years ago. And the resolution is amazing. And it's all free. You can just go on and browse these things. And it's been it feels like a great use of bandwidth, but also it's a really interesting way of spending a bit of time just mindlessly browsing through some of these artifacts and learning a bit. Would you use something like this, Ian, or is this not up your street?
Well, I mean, I haven't, so that suggests that it isn't. But I think it's an absolutely fantastic idea. I am captivated by very high resolution images, no matter what they are. So, something that lets you really explore, and, you know, photography these days, we can get such a lot of resolution out of images that you really can see things that you would never ever be able to notice in person. And obviously I'm getting older, I now have to wear glasses a fair bit of the time to see stuff, which I resent enormously. So sitting at a computer with a nice big screen and being able to explore, you know, these wonderful historical artifacts would actually be extremely exciting. I would definitely enjoy that, I think, and depending on what it is. I've occasionally enjoyed art in fact, I think on Google Arts and Culture or similar, because it is quite wonderful to see For example, you know, very famous paintings that you haven't yet had a chance to see in person, and to explore them and to sort of see the cracks in the paint, and you know, think about how long this thing has existed for and the skill involved in painting the Mona Lisa years ago when, you know, things were different. I've really tailed off there into obscurity, but anyway, it is quite wonderful.
Permit me a transition then in that case.
Will do.
I like the Museum of London quite a lot. It's because there's so much incredible history in London because of how long it's obviously been a place. And the Museum of London has some archived stuff online, but the resolution of the images is never that high, and it never feels like a particularly compelling experience. It sort of feels a bit like browsing Google Images and just searching through the results. But I like what the British Museum has done because it feels a bit more interactive. It feels like a destination as opposed to just a thing that you're passing through mindlessly. So I would encourage anyone who is interested in history to go and have a look. It's good, and from what I can tell, it's available to anyone in the world. It's not just for people who are in the UK, but the Google Arts and Culture service does seem pretty comprehensive. There's some great museums. The Science Museum is on there as well, London Science Museum. There's obviously a lot of museums in New York. Korea, there's a big collection of Korea stuff from one of the Korean universities. So there's it's well worth
the Science Museum one has the potential to be really good. I think the more of things like these happen, you know, the idea of the Science Museum would be very, very well suited to a VR experience, to, you know, different things like, you know, being able to do things related to what you've seen perhaps on your phone. You know, that could be you know, I don't know, do some coding or something like that. You know, the idea of having a museum, you know, online or on a mobile device is quite good if you could then take that further and make it more than just a museum experience.
But you can literally do that now, like on with the Google app. You can go into a museum and just navigate your way through a museum as if it was Google Street View. That's what I was doing in the British Museum.
Well, and then that's fine, but I feel like if you're going to... That will work for some people if they're particularly interested in a subject or whatever, but I kind of feel like it would be an opportunity to expand that, and I would love to see stuff like that in actual VR if it isn't already. And I don't have a VR headset, although that's another thing I've considered buying post-lockdown because... Well, why not? It sounds like a really nice way to spend some time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would recommend buying it before you leave lockdown, because once you can leave lockdown, surely the benefit is to go and experience the actual real world.
No, I'm never leaving the house again. This is me now. I'm enjoying it.
Fair enough. Well, the other thing I would point out is in the Science Museum, the London Science Museum, on the Google app, you can browse some interactive... I'm not going to say tours, they're not really tours, they're kind of like just nicely presented images and text, but of some of the missions to the moon and stuff to do with cosmonauts and the space race and some of the original computers and the Enigma machine and stuff like that. So it's really opened my eyes to what museums are doing online, just knowing that the British Museum has published all this stuff online itself. So I'll include links to all of this stuff in the show notes at uktechshow.com and in the MP3 description for this episode as well. So have a check out of that and let me know anything that you find interesting that we should be looking at. hello@uktechshow.com. Ian, I wanted to talk a little bit about webcams webkai, as
absolutely, definitely not called that.
Over the last few weeks, I've been experimenting a little bit with what the best setup is for the various uses that I have for webcams, because doing so many Zoom meetings, I wasn't convinced that the built-in little webcams was the best thing to be using. And then I thought, well, if I'm upgrading my webcam for meetings, why not upgrade the webcam and start streaming the podcast live to patrons and in the Discord when we start doing the show? So I started looking into that, and then I had to think about lighting, because I designed this home studio that I work and record in for sound, which means that it's not visually super appealing, and it's quite dark. So I thought, well, I then have to consider lighting. And then I started considering, well, maybe I should just buy a camera and connect my camera, as in an actual DSLR camera, up and use that, because that's how Andy films his YouTube videos. And then I thought, but I already have a camera. So over the last few weeks, I've been experimenting, and I wanted to talk you through some of the things that I've learnt and the products I've tried out and what I've settled on. So let's start with the basics, because most people who have a laptop or a modern all-in-one desktop will have a built-in webcam. The one on my iMac is perfectly fine. I think it's 720p. If you're in a well-lit room and you're staring into it, it's fine. Let's not beat around the bush. For most people, that is probably fine. But you don't have to pay very much at all to get an improved webcam experience. And I toyed with a couple that I was looking at. I looked at two initially. There was a Logitech one, mm-hmm, that was about £80. It's quite popular. And we talked about it briefly at the time when we talked about how webcams were just impossible to buy. Yeah. This is when I was starting to look at this. And the other one that I was looking at was a Razer Kayo. It might be Kiyo. It's K-I-Y-O. And that was an interesting one because it comes with a ring light around the lens. So it's very popular with streamers, but
doesn't work seemed on the Mac.
Exactly. So I got one of the Kiyos sent in from Razer, one of their PRs. So I didn't buy it, just to caveat that. I've loaned it to trial it. And it is very good, I have to say, in general, and it is a massive, massive, massive step up from the built-in webcam. But I think the reason I like it so much is that it has the built-in ring light, but you don't have to manually control the light. So if you have it plugged into Windows, and I have Windows running in parallels on my Mac, so the Kayo is connected into the Windows partition, so I use it for my meetings. Whenever the camera activates for a conference, for example, the light comes on, and when you close it, then the light goes off. And it's a very, very, very convenient product. And when I send this back and the lockdown supply chain eases up, I'll be buying one, because I think they're about £90, maybe £100, and it totally upgraded my calls to the point you could probably stream anything you wanted and be perfectly content with it. But because of the limitation, it only being officially supported on Windows means that for a Mac user like me, it was never going to be the perfect solution, because I only use Windows for work. And so what? That's not going to do it for me. So I can't recommend it at all for Mac users, but for Windows users, it does seem warrant probably a good 8 out of 10 for me.
Didn't they come up with a driver, for crying out loud?
Well, some apps do seem to natively support it. Discord is one of those. Skype seems to support it natively, but it doesn't show up.
Doesn't allow you to use the ring light?
No, it does. It does allow you to use the ring light. Yeah. So there are some workarounds for specific apps, but it's not something that I can recommend to Mac users, because it's not designed for it. The driver support, as you say, isn't there. But for Windows users, it's great. Particularly, I think, for anyone who's streaming their face on a fairly regular basis, it's a good upgrade. So the other thing that I was thinking is buying a DSLR specifically for this. But two things. One, I already have a really good DSLR, because my main camera is a Sony Alpha. It's an A7 R2. And it's a wonderful, wonderful DSLR that I've had for about 3 years and loved to pieces. The problem, though, it turns out, and I didn't realize this, is that it's not actually that easy to just plug a DSLR into a computer and have it work as a webcam. They're not designed for it at all. So what I had to do is buy a hardware encoder box, and I bought two because I couldn't figure out which one to buy. The first one I bought was a Blackmagic Intensity Shuttle, which is very good because it allows you to plug in the HDMI out, which a mini HDMI is on the Sony, and just plug an HDMI cable into the box, and then you can capture your software, your video within software on the Mac or on PC. It works for both. But it turns out that that box doesn't support the UVC like webcam setup, so you can't actually use it by default as a webcam, which is partly a mistake on my part for not realizing that that was even a thing I had to consider, which is why I'm talking about it now. But it also meant that it's slightly more flexible in the sources that it will capture, so you can plug composite in, you can plug components.
We could
video
still do
into
that
it.
As a webcam, though. Like, it's just how they handle that bit of it. Like, presumably.
Well, you can plug all these ones in simultaneously, and you can output to the same product as well. So it's an interface. It's not just like a, you know, it's not a dumb port for plugging an HDMI cable into.
No, but that you know, like, why wouldn't they allow you to use the USB connectivity to as a webcam? Because they do have a product that does that.
They do, and I was looking at that, but they were really, really hard to get hold of because of the supply chain. So what I then bought was, it's by a company called StarTech, which I'd never really heard of as a
quite well known
brand. It turns out they are. I just never really bought anything from them, and I bought a HDMI capture box that is. It's basically a dumb box. It's got an HDMI in, and it's got a USB 3 out. And you plug in any HDMI source, and what the computer sees is a webcam, which means any software and video capturing tool that you have at your disposal, it will show up in, and you can capture directly into it, which means you can use it for Discord. It means you can use it for Skype. It means you can capture into QuickTime for Final Cut use. It also shows up in my Windows partition for my meetings. So I've got all that plugged in, and that's been great. But that, again, cost about 180 quid, but it was a hell of a lot cheaper than buying a brand new camera that had some kind of webcam interface built in. And it was not really that much more expensive than buying a really good dedicated Logitech type webcam that was going to sit on top. So it allowed me to use that SLR with all the lenses, and the picture quality is amazing, and I've used it for broadcast. You know, it's what I've used when I've been doing TV hits for Bloomberg. I've been using that. Lighting was a problem, so I also had to buy newer
I'm very familiar.
Yes, 14-inch ring light, which has a camera mount built into it. So you can mount the camera within the ring light itself. So when you're staring at it, it looks like the ring light is just going around the edge of the lens. And obviously I've got my existing Sennheiser microphone linked up. And so that's the extreme end of the setup, which is basically the microphone plugged into the mixing desk as I use for recording this show and I'm using now, with a DSLR plugged into a hardware encoder box, with a ring light set up to light my face. And that's why the Kaio was such an interesting and fun compromise, because in one package you sort of get all the sort of macro benefits of having a decent camera with autofocus and a light setup built into one unit. But it is also possible to split out those individual features and use something like an SLR and a standalone light and have an amazing home video setup that you can also use as a webcam. It just means buying some hardware and being aware of what those hardware restrictions are and not doing what I did and buy the wrong one and then have to buy another one. So if anyone wants to buy a Blackmagic Intensity Shuttle, do let me know. It's been used once ever.
Can't you return it?
No, not easily, because I didn't buy it from Amazon, unfortunately, and it's not faulty. It works fine. It's just it doesn't do what I wanted it to do that I thought it did do.
Well, fair enough. I mean, you will find that useful, though, won't you? Because can you not use that for capturing analog sources and stuff?
Oh, absolutely, and that's why I'm not in a hurry to sell it, because I bought that particular model knowing that I can also plug in a VHS into it. I can plug old camcorders in to it. So it probably won't get wasted at all. It's just a bit annoying that I didn't need to buy it when I did buy it and had to buy something else
And you could have found a solution to do analog capture into HDMI and then brought it in using whatever solution you found. But yeah, you know, this stuff happens.
Yeah. But I just thought it might be worth explaining some of that, because it's been a bit of experimentation on my part for the last few weeks to figure out, okay, well, if I want to upgrade my webcam setup, what are my options? Obviously, there is just buying a standard webcam and plugging it in. But depending on the environment you're in, the lighting might not be great or the sound might not be great. And so I thought, well, experimenting with something like the Kayo, where it's got a light built in, but it's held back by the fact that it's Windows only, or using the individual setup, which means with the DSLR, it means you're getting more use out of a really amazing camera that you might already own. And then you just need to buy a few extra bits and pieces in order to hook it up. But then you get this amazing professional setup. I just didn't realize how wide my selection of options were for upgrading my home video experience, and it's been a fun little experiment, and one that maybe some other people can take advantage of.
Yes.
What do you use, Ian? Because you're a video guy.
Well, I am a video guy, and at the moment I don't use anything. I mean, I have got capture cards, so it is possible for me to set something up. I've got my old Panasonic camcorder thing that it's probably not quite good enough quality. It's certainly better than a webcam, and you can put Micro Four Thirds lenses on it, so it's quite flexible, including autofocus, although quite rudimentary autofocus, it has to be said. And I also have a Nikon SLR that I could use, which I believe also, which does do clean HDMI out, so you can get quite a nice result from that. So it's definitely possible for me to do things. What I feel like I want, and we've talked about this before, I do want that A10 Mini, because, you know, you can plug HDMI things into it. It shows up like a USB webcam, and it enables you to do all of the things you said, as well as switch between them. So you could have like your iPad plugged into it over HDMI and use that for sort of playing out clips or something like that. And, you know, and have cameras connected to it. And of course, you know, a normal PC or whatever you wanted. So those are quite good. I think they're very popular with streamers.
They are. This is the Black Magic.
Yeah. There's two versions of it now. They launched the A10 Mini, which is pretty good. I think it's around 300. I think I want to say 399, but it's very difficult to tell, because as soon as the situation emerged as we're in now, all the prices just went mental. Like, either it wasn't in stock and you could pre-order it and it was a sensible price, or it was in stock and you had to pay like 600 quid for it and it just didn't seem worth it. But there's also a pro version of it now, which has a few extra features, I think, which would be good. The only problem I could see when I looked at it was that when you plug something into HDMI, obviously there is a slight delay. If you're taking the audio from a separate source and running it through your computer, say, and feeding it out, it will not be in sync. And that is a slight issue. I haven't got the equipment, I can't test it to see how well it would work. There probably are options in terms of, you know, plugging PC output into camera input or something like that to make it work. The A10 Mini has only got two small headphone style jacks for inputs. So that's a bit of an issue, but I imagine that those are delayed along with the video. I don't know. It seems like that would be a thing, so that there must be some kind of synchronization possible. But it didn't look quite good enough for high quality. I mean, it would be fine. It would sound fine, but it felt like a bit fiddly given, you know, all of the other bits of equipment that I'm using. So I remain very interested by it. And, if I could talk myself into becoming some kind of streamer, which I don't feel like I particularly am, then maybe I would invest some money in it and do it. But at the moment, it feels like I wouldn't have a lot of uses for it, and therefore it would just be a toy, and I wouldn't get a huge amount of use out of it.
Says the person who wants to buy a 3D printer to print out screws.
I mean, yeah, but I'm not saying I wouldn't have fun with it. I'm just saying I'm dubious that the benefits of it would be worth the investment of money. That's all.
Well, Nick in the chat room says that an alternative to the Kayo on the Mac is Logitech C930, which was the one I was initially looking at. And Brian has said that a good way of upgrading the video quality on an iPad is to plug an external microphone into the iPad itself, which is definitely something you can do. John said he's got the Blue Snowball, which is a great, very, very popular microphone for streamers. You'll recognize it in a lot of videos as well. And yes, because the cameras on the iPads are very, very good, but the sound isn't always the best. You can just plug an external microphone in, and that works very nicely as well. So lots and lots of options. But if you've got another option or a favorite product, do let us know. It's been a while since we've had a real nerd out about hardware, but we welcome your recommendations that we'll pass on to other people. hello@uktechshow.com.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/uktech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
Let's check in with Tom Merritt from Daily Tech News Show and hear what's been going on this week in his wider world of global tech.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, doctors and nurses feel pressure to be social media experts. We look at why the UK and France prefer centralized contact tracing apps over decentralized. The autonomous car developments have changed without the ability to drive the cars around. Whether the fight between Universal Studios and AMC Theaters will change the stuff we can stream. And then Robert Herron recommends home theater speakers so whatever you stream will sound better. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Thank you, Tom. Keeping it real, as always. Keeping it real. Keeping it... what else do people say when they say keeping it real? Keeping it fresh? Well, anyway, it's been much fun this week. Thank you for listening to us once again. We'll be back next week with another episode. Thank you to everyone who's been listening to us live in our Discord. Brian is here. Charlotte's here. John's here. Nick's here. It's good to have you guys here, so thank you for joining us. And I suppose stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll be back with you in another week.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.